Speaking of Reliability, a podcast with good friends talking with you about reliability engineering topics.
Welcome to Speaking of Reliability. This is Carl Carlson.
And Fred Schankelberg. Hey, Carl.
Hey, Fred. I was looking at some of the emails we get, and a really interesting email came in from one of the readers that was posted on the Ascendo site, and talking about keeping pace with reliability tools when you don't use them daily in your job. And I thought, that is just a fascinating topic for a podcast.
It's, you know, usually I hear that kind of comment when it's, you know, why do I take the CRE or certification type thing? And I think we've talked about it. It makes you become aware of a range of tools. But I think that was a different question here. It's you know, I'm a working professional. How do I stay up to date? All this stuff.
Yeah, let's unpack that in two steps. The first step's pretty easy, but it's still important. And that's that I think it's really important for reliability engineers in our profession to realize that they need to keep pace with reliability tools. In other words, the first step is the awareness that it's important to do. And then we can talk about how you do it.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't want to miss that first step because I bet there's some people that maybe they have expertise in HALT or some type of reliability modeling, and then they try to focus a career around that, but not necessarily realizing that it's essential to have an awareness of the broad set of tools of reliability engineering and management, even though you're focused. So that step sort of sets the stage. Okay, so if you, as a listener, if you realize that that's important, then how do we go about it? And that's what we can talk about on this podcast. What are some of the strategies mm-hmm. that we've used or we see that work to keep pace?
Well, that awareness part, before we leave that, it's Mike Silverman was running I think it was Qualmark at the time, but he was running a lab with some HALT equipment in it. Eventually, Mike even wrote a book that was how everything is connected to HALT. So he was pretty well specialized, but he was certainly at some point certainly became aware that his clients needed, you know, some of them needed FMEA, some of them needed modeling, some needed accelerated testing, and so on. And then he invited me to become a consultant. But it was his awareness that no, everything isn't HALT. You know, and there are people that make a career out of doing nothing but that and selling chambers and writing books about it and so on. But it's, I think the awareness is a shift to what's of service to the client or the customer, you know, or the project you're working on. It's, you know, just because I'm really, really good at reliability modeling, well, that doesn't solve all the problems, you know?
Yeah, for sure. Let's both take a shot at in a minute or two as to why we think it's essential to have a broad understanding of the tools of reliability, R&M tools, reliability maintainability, in addition to specializing in one or two, why it's essential to have an awareness or a sort of a broader understanding of all the tools. You want to take a shot at that?
Well, I mean, I'll use an old a metaphor, or I think that's the right term, or I'm not sure if that is the right term or not, but basically it's a toolbox, right? The reliability activities we engage in, and whether it's setting a goal to dealing with field data or failure analysis or, you know, maintenance practices, any of these activities or tools are simply a technique or means or a method to get something done. And we're not there because we're the world's expert at XYZ tool. You might be, that might be a part of your career and your value add, but it's why it's so important is when you reach into the toolkit, everything's not solved with a hammer. Although some people think it's a pretty useful tool for a wide range of activities. It's being aware that, oh, I need a Phillips screwdriver, you know,
yeah.
That would be of service to getting this task done. Now, a hammer could do the job of putting a screw in, but it's not the most efficient or elegant solution. And
I got to see you do that.
it can be done. But the idea is, the idea is you got to get out of what you are good at and what's in service to the project you're working on, to the team you're supporting, to the organization you work with, to the customers you serve. Even if I don't know how to use a screwdriver, right, then, and there's been occasions when I doubted my own capability with the screwdriver, it's, you need to know what's the right approach or tool or means to get to a solution. And I think that's why it's so important to be aware of what's all available to us as reliability practitioners. And we're not going to be experts at all of them. That's okay. We need to know which ones are appropriate, which ones we may need to learn, which ones we need to get somebody else that is the expert in that to get involved. If you're not aware of it, every problem's a nail and you've got a hammer. And that's just not very efficient.
It's not a good recipe. So that's a good answer. Let me take a shot at it as well. First of all, I do think it's important for people to, in their career, to have specialties. So when I'm coaching people, I say, okay, we want two things here. We want you to have a broad understanding of reliability and maintainability, the whole length and breadth of the subject. And then I think you should specialize in certain areas. And so I think there's a role for depth, and that should be based on areas of interest, areas of skill, areas of career opportunity. Those are all elements in selecting the area of depth. Some of it will come from background in education, but oftentimes it's going to come from specializing within a company. In addition to that, it's important to have an understanding of the whole set of tools. And here's why I think that's important, is because we want to work in the direction of reliability programs and reliability planning. And so if you're going to increase your value as a reliability engineer, it's important to know what comes before and after your specialty and where your specialty fits into the larger program. It's also, as you point out, it's essential that we don't use one tool automatically. Every time you have a new program or a new project or changes, you need to know why you're using a tool. So you don't automatically do FMEA, you don't automatically do HALT. You want to know what it's, as we've talked about, what decisions it's supporting and what and why you're using that. So tool selection is important. If you only specialize, you'll bias towards one or two tools,
yep.
And that's not good. Also, sometimes programs or technology changes. What used to be the greatest tool in the world, because of evolving technology. Like, for instance, let's say you were really good 15 years ago at vehicle testing, if you're in the automotive field.
Mm-hmm.
You really knew how to run the vehicle, what happens on the test track and what kinds of failures came about. But then things change. Fast to market becomes more of a critical path for companies, which makes, and budgets and what have you, which makes prototype vehicle testing less possible. And if you've staked your career on one area, you can sometimes end up without that specialty. That hasn't happened with HALT and FMA, for example, but it has happened with other tools.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there's a lot of reason. And then the other reason, I think, to have a length and breadth is so that you know when to ask for help. If you have to have enough awareness of the different tools to know when they might be needed and then when to pull in, bring somebody in who is an expert in that area or gain the expertise yourself. So I think that's my 2-minute speech
on
the subject.
I don't know. One other thought is that it also pays to know how the tools interconnect. It's not like you just do halt and that's it. Now you need to understand the range of tools for root cause analysis, right? And you don't just know setting up testing. You also need to know data analysis and how to interpret it. And on and on and on. It goes back to what I mentioned about Mike's book. Everything in his book, he used halt as a central piece and how it interacted and either got information from or informed so many other activities. Well, I think it's true for just about any depth of specialty is that it's not isolated. It is interacting with so many other tools inside and outside of reliability engineering. And I think this awareness is, I mean, the question was about the reliability set of tools, but I think we also need to be aware of what electrical engineers' set of tools are, what are mechanical engineering tools, well, as the software folks solve problems. And our awareness needs to broaden out across the disciplines that we're working with as well.
Yeah, and of course, when we talk about reliability, and I think you're in the same place, as we're really talking about reliability, availability, supportability, all the different aspects. So some people call it RAM, some people call it RMS. Mm-hmm. It's the whole set of tools. So let's shift then this really good question: how do you keep pace with reliability tools if you don't use them in your daily job? This reader. Said their focus of their job function is on RCM, reliability centered maintenance. Mm-hmm. And yet, as we've talked about, and as it's so true, is oftentimes you can't achieve RCM unless you have design for reliability, for example, on equipment. That's at a different stage. And it's very hard to maintain equipment that's designed poorly. So it's good to be aware of, for example, DFR, even if you have an RCM focus, and it's good to be aware of other aspects, suppliers, you know, this type of thing. And so how do you do that? And I've got a couple thoughts, and then I'd love to hear what you think. Mm-hmm. Fred. I think I try to dedicate, I'm talking about the last 30 plus years, I try to dedicate some of my time to general improvement of my knowledge. And so I bake it into my schedule, annual or even monthly, taking classes that are outside my area of focus, as well as obviously some that are in with evolving technology. So webinars, conferences, books, I try to maintain a bookshelf of different aspects of reliability so I can refer to them when needed. And certification, which kind of broadens out, obviously, for reliability certification and others. So that's one aspect that I'm thinking of. How about you, Fred?
I was going to say, you just have one bookshelf? Come on. You've been at this for 30 years.
I actually have many, many bookshelves.
Yeah.
That was a generic bookshelf.
Okay.
I'm looking at my office here has got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 shelves filled with books.
Okay. Yeah.
That's just one part of the house.
Yeah. No, I'm just going to have to poke you on that one. Okay. But your point of, you know, you have to deliberately do professional development. And as our, you know, the question came from somebody that is taking part of that, whether it's through the podcast or through the articles that we have on the Ascendo site. Which is great. That's what it's there for, is to give you the smorgasbord, if I pronounce that correctly, of ways to learn about topics. And you could dip in real quick for a quick article, or just make it a routine that you listen to the podcast regularly, just as because we cover so many different topics. And
that's a good point.
You know, so that part of it is I agree with you, Carl, is just make time to do that. But I think another aspect of that is look for opportunities to make it part of what you do on a day-to-day basis. You know, look, RCM in part relies on understanding the failure patterns of your equipment. You know, what's the time to failure distribution? Well, there's regression analysis and Weibull's studies, and you certainly have opportunities for failure analysis, root cause analysis. And then look for those opportunities when there's talk of a new piece of equipment going, raise your hand and going, hey, we need to design this so that we can maintain it. Let's do the, let me participate in that. And yeah, you're not the expert on it, but you bring a view that the rest of that team may not have, and you can reinforce that skill and hone your skills for a job purpose to do that. I think beyond being curious, I think is the other piece of this is, like we said earlier, is you, first is you need to be aware that there's other tools that you need to be aware of, or aware of other tools. The other one is being curious, you know, is even if you don't know the exact name of the tool or technique that's out there, or the developments in it or whatever, is look at an issue or a problem or a situation and go, there might be a way to solve this. And ask somebody, get online and ask somebody that's has a broader experience, ask your mentor, ask Google, and see if you can find some information about how would you go about doing that. And I mean, years ago, I was reading articles, the library would send me the table of contents for different technical journals. And I kept seeing articles that were using Monte Carlo. And I'm like, what's Monte Carlo? I thought that was a city in France or somewhere, in Europe. And so I wrote back to the librarians and this was before email. And I was like, well, what is Monte Carlo? And so they sent me a book and a couple of papers on it. And I was like, oh, okay, now I know what it is. And it was years before I had the computing power to be able to do Monte Carlo simulations, But I go, oh, I know what that is. And so it's just be curious. If you see something or hear something that doesn't, what is that? Don't just let it go. Ask the next question. Go find a quick an answer for that to build up your vocabulary about what we do and how we solve problems.
Good strategy. That's ongoing. Like being curious in life, being curious in your career, being curious all the time is a wonderful quality. So I'm thinking also now just looking sort of brainstorming strategies to help with this topic. One thing is goal setting. I'm thinking of it's a good idea to have goals, and goals include on your job, goals would include areas that you're going to expand your knowledge and your skills. So I would think a part of your personal development program should include every year, I'm going to get knowledgeable in the following areas. And some of them might be expanding your knowledge in your area of expertise, and others might be broadening out. And maybe the goals have, those developmental goals have, you know, part A, part B. Mm-hmm. But always write them down, get them agreed by your boss, your management. And then when you see a conference coming up that fits into those goals, you've already planted the seed, and you say, okay, as part of my personal development program, I was going to learn more about RCM. Say you're a DFR engineer, and there's an RCM conference, and they're more likely to send you. So I would say as part of the annual annual goal setting with your boss and management, or even if you don't have that formally, do it on your own. Create goals to increase personal development on areas of that you want to learn about. And of course, that can be driven by curiosity. Mm-hmm. The other point I wanted to make is knowledge is not bimodal. It's not like you have it or you don't. You can learn more about RCA, for example, and more and more. You think you've taken a course on RCA, you still don't know as much as you can. There's books, webinars. There's almost no limit to how smart you can be on a given subject. And so I would be careful not just to check the box and say, okay, now I know what HALT is forevermore, because new information comes out, new books, new articles. And so I would stay on that edge trying to, like, for instance, this year would have been my 27th year at Rams. And every time I go to Rams, I attend the sessions. I pick a handful of ones that I actually sit and listen to, some people say, well, haven't you already heard that? Well, yes, on that subject, but I haven't heard from that person on that day with those questions and answers from the audience. And so I'm always picking something up and I take notes mm-hmm. from it of the salient points. And then I integrate that into my practice. So part of it is a lifelong journey of expanding your personal development and just walking that path on a regular basis. So it's just a few thoughts.
Yeah. I would add one more strategy. I think you hit all the high points. I made a quick list while we're, you know, when you talked about strategies to keep going, I'm like, okay, well, he talked about that. He talked about that. I would add the get feedback is find somebody, whether it's through your network on the conferences or through Ascendo or, you know, pick, you know, or through LinkedIn connections or somebody where you work that's is more knowledgeable in different areas that you want to learn more about is, as you explore and practice and learn, you need to ask questions. You're going to have, you know, let me bounce this. Do I understand this correctly? Is this the way appropriate interpretation of this data analysis? Or is this, you know, is find somebody that's willing to give you the feedback. And sometimes it's, you know, you take a course and then you're paying for or you're engaging somebody to provide you the feedback mechanism. But as an ongoing basis, is find somebody to give you the sounding board.
That is a great point, and I think would be a terrific subject for a podcast.
Might even be a business idea.
Yes, really, that is such an important subject. Let's we're probably towards the end of this particular podcast, but let's keep a flag on that one because I'd love to chat about the whole subject of feedback. And there's giving feedback, receiving it, and everything about it is so important to your career. And it fits, as you point out, Fred, it fits into the subject of keeping pace with reliability tools because you're hearing from people about where you can do things better or what areas to explore and mm-hmm. And then you create goals and tasks from that. So very, very good.
Okay.
And if you're a listener and you have ideas on how you keep pace with reliability tools, things that we may have talked about or may not have talked about, we would love to hear from you. And where are some of the places that they can go to get in touch with us, Fred?
Well, right now, the easiest one is at ascendoreliability.com/go/SOR. And there's a comment form there or suggestion box, I think is what I named it. And there's also a new widget there that lets you hit record and it'll use whatever device you're on's microphone, assuming it has one. And you record up to, I think it's a 90-second comment or question for us. And we would like to hear from you, and we could use that recording to let you describe your question directly. You can literally become part of the conversation. And the other ways is that comment form there, the suggestion box, but you can also find us through our about pages, excuse me, and or on LinkedIn. All of the hosts on the show are on LinkedIn also. And we certainly love hearing from you. We get most of our ideas for topics these days, as we have for hundreds of episodes, from feedback and input from you, the listeners. So that we really do enjoy having your part of the conversation as part of the show. So those are a couple of ideas there, Carl.
Okay, very good. So nice wrap up, and glad to talk with you about this subject, Fred.
All right, no problems. And let us know if we answered your question, or maybe pose new ones. All right. Thanks, Carl. We'll talk to you later.
Thanks, Fred.
Thanks for listening to Speaking of Reliability. We invite you to join the conversation if you have a question or a topic that you think we should discuss in a future show. Please let us know. You can find a comment box below the episode show notes, or just leave a note as part of a review on iTunes.